tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 459 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Good evening.
Well, we've got some interesting news to start out this episode with. A couple of announcements that I don't think any of us saw coming.
Definitely not.
The Dragon Ball announcements, there was some leeway because this was making a big deal of 40th anniversary, yada yada. So there were rumors with regard to some of them. But the other news, yeah, I would say is definitely out of left field.
Right. So I think we all pretty much assume that Dandadan Season 2 and the Blue Knight core of Blue Exorcist were going to be coming up very soon, but it turns out that's not going to be happening. Instead, we're getting two new shows that had not been announced until now. One is Blue Lock, and the other is Tokyo Revengers.
I've heard of Tokyo Revengers. I don't know anything about it, but I've heard of it. I have never seen the words Blue Lock put together. Like, I didn't know that was a thing.
I can give you a little bit of information. Like, Blue Lock and Tokyo Revengers are both super popular manga. I'm not sure necessarily how well received the anime adaptations are, but at least I know the manga pretty popular. Blue Lock, I think they showed the ad on Toonami. That kind of gives you the rundown well enough. I've never seen Blue Lock. I don't know much about it other than the soccer anime. And I think the little commercial that Toonami gave helped, I guess, you know, give you a general premise. So it's going to be sports anime. I'm not sure the last time we had a sports anime in Toonami since IGPX. I could be blanking on it. But Toonami doesn't have a ton of sports anime, so it's definitely going to be something new. I heard the second season was kind of shittily made. I don't know how well I heard about the first season doing. Again, I don't know how well the anime had been received overall. I just don't know manga is very popular. Tokyo Revengers, I saw the first season. I'd be lying if I could tell you I remember anything of it. I remember the basic premise. It's basically the main character gets the ability to loop back in time into his own body. So he's like a late 20s kind of ne'er-do-well, you know, loser, whatever. Gains the ability to time travel back into his high school body, and he keeps going back and forth between time because he's trying to save the life of his ex-girlfriend who got killed in a gang war. Each time he goes back in time, he changes the present, and it's kind of like a delinquent manga with time travel in it. Okay. So that's the general premise. I found the first season, as you said, not very memorable. There are, I think, two more seasons after that. So I think there are a total of 38 Blue Lock episodes plus a movie. There's 50 Tokyo Revengers episodes, maybe a movie too, I'm not sure. But basically,
wow.
I assume Toonami picked them up because, A, at least the manga popular. Again, I don't know too much about how well the anime received. Maybe they did well in Crunchyroll. At least I know Blue Lock's on Crunchyroll. I don't know if Tokyo Revengers was a Disney thing or a Crunchyroll thing. I'm not sure. But basically, it's content for basically the entire rest of the year. And that's probably why they picked it up.
Everything you pretty much said, I was generally aware of. I didn't, except for the fact that how long these shows were, I did not realize 50 episodes. That's interesting. They did not air any kind of promo for Tokyo Revengers. However, they did air, like you said, a promo for Blue Lock this past weekend. I do get the idea that it is sports anime, but it's kind of also like a weird kind of, it doesn't seem as sportsy as I expected. It's more like some kind of weird experiment is going on.
Well, the basic premise, I mean, they kind of said it in the commercial, is just trying to train World Cup caliber athletes, right? So
It's like a cutthroat school where people like are willing to kill in order to, I mean, I don't know if they're literally going to, but they say that in that promo.
I don't think it's like Mario Soccer or whatever. I don't think there's actually any murder. I'd be very surprised if there was murder like that. It's just like,
they're just very, very serious. And it's like very cutthroat. And it's not like they're competing against teams. It's players that are competing to be in a program in order to be selected. It's that kind of premise. So, yeah.
I'm noting here that both of these shows are, both of these animes, at least the first seasons, are licensed by Crunchyroll. So like the Crunchyroll Funimation merged group.
Okay, so they're
now.
Both Crunchyroll. Okay.
But Tokyo Revengers, according to Wikipedia, it says Crunchyroll had the first season of Tokyo Revengers. It says, this is just Wikipedia here, Disney Platform Distribution licensed the second and third season. Hmm. So I'm wondering, does that mean we won't get those? Because, or like, if Toonami wanted to license those, they'd have to go elsewhere, right?
I did see the mention of the Disney thing on one of those shows when I was looking up information about
it. Yeah, I vaguely remember something about Disney. That was probably that Disney has half the series and Crunchyroll has the other half.
Let me wrap up this portion here by just saying that the Blue Lock and Tokyo Revengers the premiere dates for those are going to be February 7th. So just in a couple of weeks.
All right, because next weekend will be the season finale of Mashal and Blue Exorcist, right? So
yeah, and like I said, we all kind of assumed Blue Exorcist wasn't going to go away, but that was the next thing I wanted to mention is that people were saying that it seems like the way the timing worked out, that Toonami most likely had not gotten the rights for the Blue Knight arc, that it just didn't work out that way. So
I suspect it'll be on Toonami eventually, though.
Watch this season finale end on a huge like cliffhanger that we'll have to sit on. Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, Yukio's going to take off his glasses, break them, and just fly up in the sky like Aizen.
And then Shammy will become a demon.
He's going to kill all of the Esquires, and that's going to be the season
finale. Oh, yes, the Padawans, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Younglings, exactly. Whatever.
More on that later.
Interesting. Okay. The other piece of news I want to talk about briefly here. Again, this is Toonami adjacent. Nothing been announced, but there is, of course, the huge Dragon Ball anniversary celebrations that are going on. And they did announce two quote unquote new shows, but they aren't really new. One's kind of new and one is kind of a redo. One is going to be called Dragon Ball Beerus, which is the third time that they've animated the Beerus saga.
My understanding is going to be more like a Kai version of Dragon Ball Super rather than redoing everything. I think they just were so ashamed of what they'd done the last time because the production was rushed at the beginning. They want to like unfuck it as much as you can without just doing a whole new animation for everything. But
and then the next one is a continuation of Super in the form of Dragon Ball Super Galaxy Patrol, where we're going to see apparently Goku and Vegeta joining the Galaxy Patrol in order to help save the galaxy from a planet-eating entity, something to that effect.
I believe it's the Moro arc from Dragon Ball Super manga. It's unclear if it's going to be a one-to-one adaptation or it's going to be more like a redo of that arc because the Dragon Ball Super manga and anime were never 100%
exactly
one-to-one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that I'd heard that it's something to do with that, but at the same time, the manga and the anime aren't quite really canonically super connected. So anyway, that's interesting. Also, one last thing about that. It said that the Super Galaxy Patrol stuff has elements from it from Toriyama. Now, this would have been after he had passed, so I don't quite understand that.
Well, no, I mean, obviously, Toriyama, you know, he's been dead, I think, a year plus at this point, but obviously he had lots of things in the works. So, like, it's not uncommon for when authors or creators or whatever pass away that they still had, like, in-progress projects or notes or whatnot. And so, for example, I think the Moro and Granola arcs that were in the manga had input from Toriyama, even though he didn't, like, wasn't the chief writer, I think. So, they're obviously going to take some...
Okay, I follow you. So, what you're saying is that the manga that they're inspiring this anime by had input from him, not this anime, because obviously it would have been too late for them to work on this.
Well, the Galaxy Patrol anime will probably take some elements from the manga, some elements from probably notes Toriyama has had around for ages and whatnot, and, you know, final wishes or requests or whatever. Like, even though he's passed, like, there's still a mountain of work he left behind. Obviously, notes, conversations, details, lore dumps on his hard drives, probably. Like,
yeah, who knows? I mean, that's all speculation. I'm just saying they very prominently put his name on this, and I was just kind of surprised.
Right, but you're asking why they would, and, like, obviously, I'm speculating in some part, but, like, that would be the obvious reason why, because they're still using his contributions, his work, even though he's passed, whatnot.
I guess we'll see.
They probably very, very likely started production on this before he passed. So,
and that could be another situation where, like with what we had with Daima, where he had worked on it before it even finished. So possibly, but again, there's no clarity on that. I did some research on it and I didn't find anything hard concrete about what his contributions were, if any. So just throwing that out there.
I mean, the Galaxy Patrol is coming out in 2027. So there's a long time we have to learn about what he was involved in. And of course, the nature of that project. And I think Beerus is coming out later this year, but of course that's just a remaster Kai something. So it's always going to take less time.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, it's Galactic Patrol. We've been saying Galaxy, but that was me. It's Galactic Patrol. By the way, this is going to be also the return of Jocko. Remember Jocko?
Barely.
Everyone loves Jocko.
The little alien guy, kind of comic relief character. Yeah, he'll be a part of this show apparently as well, which makes sense, of course. So yeah, two totally unexpected shows coming to Toonami. I have to be honest, I'm not like, I'm still just sort of like reeling from it. And I'm like, oh, okay. These aren't shows I was particularly looking forward to seeing, but you never know. Sometimes shows surprise you. Yeah, sports anime. I saw a lot of people talking about that. It's like, sports anime. So we'll see.
The fact that Toonami is able to license new shows still is, you know, we've definitely gone through times and periods where they weren't able to do that very easily. So
true.
Right. I can't say I'm looking forward to these too much, especially having already seen the first season of Tokyo Revengers and being kind of like meh about it. But again, it's always good to see Toonami getting new content. I just hope maybe at once Bleach is over, then we get done on season two. I've already seen it, but still, I'd love to see it again. It's fucking excellent, and I know you guys would love it too. So I still hope Don season two is couldn't come sooner than later.
Yeah, we'll see, because again, apparently these two shows are long runners. So, all right. Well, let's move on to the block proper. I took a lot fewer notes this week because I wanted to kind of keep the conversation going. So I'm not going to do full rundowns. These are going to be real brief rundowns, and then you guys can fill in any interesting holes and things that you think are worth mentioning. So let's go ahead and start with Primal. Primal, Season 3, Episode 2, Kingdom of Sorrow. The four major things that happened in this show, which is easy to run down because this show has got a pretty slow pace. We start out and Spear is like on his way to find Fang. He is then chased by a giant sandworm in the desert, some kind of monster, and it ends up like rushing him through a big briar patch of thorns, which kind of cuts up his whole body. Later, he's out in the desert and he starts hallucinating. He sees strange visions of giant flies and other weird things, and the landscape starts twisting on him. Then we see what appears to be him running into himself. He sees his alive self that then sort of disintegrates and burns to death, and he and himself burns to death before waking up and realizing it was a nightmare. After the commercial break, he eventually reaches what appears to be an abandoned jungle temple. There's a kind of a Mayan type temple, I guess. But there's no humans there. It's all evacuated, or it's been all like, there's nobody there. But there is something there, and that is a giant pack of lions. He has these huge fight with these lions. This takes up the majority of the second half of the episode, just fight after fight, lots of interesting battle here. He thinks he's won when he sort of slips underwater and escapes, only to fight an even larger, huge like lion.
The mega evolution, I thought came to mind.
Yeah. At first I thought it might be a zombie lion, but I don't think it was a zombie. I think it was just kind of all cut up and stuff.
No, it was just, it was the leader of the pack, basically.
Yeah, so he fights that thing. Throughout the episode, he gets little flashes of, you know, him and Fang running from things. This gives him the instinct to run when he needs to. But he also had flashbacks of, and during his hallucination of his nightmare of meeting himself, he kind of remembers his spear. And then he sees a spear there nearby, uses it to defeat this huge lion, wins, and then continues on searching for Fang. And that is the episode.
Yes, that's two episodes in a row with basically no dialogue or no dialogue at all.
No.
And yeah. So he's, so I wonder how long he's going to be like looking for Fang. Is this going to be the entire like season or I'm not even concerned is not the right word, but like, I'm kind of curious where the season's going to go. Cause okay. We have had two episodes where he's kind of like just sauntering along, kind of slowly remembering things and beating up anything in the way. This time a pack of lions.
I will say that my thinking was there are like two aspects. The gist I'm getting for this show right now is that it's kind of like we're watching like the life of a zombie. Like maybe that's like the angle they're going with here. It's like, what's it like to be a zombie? That's kind of the angle. The other angle I think too is I don't know if it's going to be like the whole episode is searching for Fang.
I mean, the whole season.
The whole season, right? The whole season searching for Fang, but like it's, I don't know. It's like, is this a journey for him to reclaim humanity? I don't know.
Yeah, you mentioned in the last episode, like he's just a zombie now, right? Can that be undone? Or is this just how it is now? He's a zombie. And, or will he somehow gain like some sort of, because he's very obviously like, he moves and acts like a zombie. He doesn't quite act like how he used to. No. But like, will he slowly start to act like Spear, which is, you know, like a caveman and not something super complex, but you know, he's a zombie now. So like, that's kind of interesting to see how much of his humanity can he reclaim over the course of the season.
Yeah. I mean, so. There's a kind of nihilistic way of looking at this where maybe that's the point of this season. It's just like, maybe there won't be any kind of redemption for him here. This is just, like I said, like we're witnessing the life of a zombie, you know, maybe to its ultimate end. I don't know. I also had like a weird theory go ahead.
I was reading some of the comments in the Primal thread on Resetera, and some of them were, you know, a lot of people are liking the show. We're like kind of a bummer so far.
Oh, yeah.
This is Spear's life now, or unlife, whatever you want to call it.
So, I mean, I guess to me, I kind of had mentioned a while back being like, Genndy, I mean, obviously, Primal is a strong show. Genndy is a strong creator. I mean, he's had some misses, you know, Unicorn Eternal, but like overall, he's a pretty strong resume. So obviously, whenever Genndy puts something out new, I'm, you know, usually looking forward to it, willing to give it benefit of doubt, whatnot. I said I was coming into this kind of skeptical in the sense of, I thought Primal season two, I had some qualms with the endings, but it wrapped things up well enough, I felt. I didn't feel like it needed more Primal. And so far in season three, I'm kind of waiting for it to justify itself, if that makes sense. Like, obviously, there's always value in creating art. And obviously, Genndy is a master of kind of doing dialogue-less content and whatnot. But it's just kind of, what are we doing here? Like, can we, I don't want to like be like, tap my metaphorical watch and say, like, let's get to the point and whatnot.
I think there's something to be said for that. I mean, like, I'm with you. I think a lot of viewers are probably feeling that too. And like I'm saying, I'm kind of reserving my thoughts on that because I feel like maybe there isn't going to be a point to this. Like I'm saying, like maybe this is more of like a kind of story where it's not really about the story. It's just about the experience. It's just about the, like, what if.
I mean, there were like a few moments that were like where Fang was hallucinating about himself in the desert. That was kind of cool. And I guess there was a moment where he got the spear, and I had thought it was going to be a situation where, okay, now Spear reclaims a spear, or a spear, excuse me, and then it's kind of showing his re-evolution or kind of gradually getting back to his old self. But then he left the spear back there, and so it was just like, oh, that wasn't a moment of growth. That was just a temporary cool moment of lion slaughter, and like, okay, that's cool, but I thought that was kind of a missed opportunity. So, like, exactly. I think if this entire season was just, let's just watch Zombie Spear just get into shenanigans, I think that would be kind of a failure, because watching Living Spear get into shenanigans was kind of cool in season one, and then season two obviously had a more serialized story. But Zombie Spear is a shadow of himself for obvious reasons. He's a zombie. So just rewatching season one, but with, like, a less interesting version of the protagonist and no Fang, is not exactly super appealing. So I don't want to rush.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of agree with you, and I kind of don't. Like, on the surface, yes, what you're saying seems kind of true. But at the same time, I don't know if this is any less compelling to me. If anything, it's mildly more compelling because we're dealing with a weird zombie situation. But I don't know. I just feel like the thing is, the hardest part I have with this is that, like, I think I'm thinking, and we're kind of all thinking about this idea, like, is there going to be like a reversal where he is restored? And I don't know, man. I just don't know. Like, he just is so decrepit, and like, he's missing half his skull, and like, he has no nose. Like, what's he going to magic that back? Maybe that's how else could it happen? You know what I'm saying? So like, I don't know. I mean,
he could stay a zombie, but at least if he was a zombie that kind of had intelligence, that would be, or, you know, for him, that would be certainly more interesting. Like, you saw a little bit of that when he was dashing through the desert and other places where he's like, oh, he can actually move when he wants to. And that's like how normal Spear moved when he needed to. So you see a little bit of those flashes of that. So, A, he could be returned to a human being, but even if he's not a human being, could still be a higher zombie that kind of has his old intellect back and be, I think, would be a more interesting character. But I'm just not sure what direction we're going. And it's been like a fifth of the season already. We're kind of just going through the motions. Again, I don't want to rush anything. And I'm not that I have any influence that the season's already done and whatnot. I can't do anything. But I just, you know, I want to be impatient. But I do feel we're kind of trudging along, and it's just kind of, let's get it on, so to speak. But who knows what happens in next episode. Maybe he throws us some curveballs further in the season. I don't know. I'm just saying, I feel like we're kind of, right, I get it. Like, this is but
it's compelling. I mean, you agree, right? It's compelling what we're witnessing.
I mean, I thought the first episode was better than the second episode, because I was definitely more open to, like, okay, like, he's obviously just came back and he's always going to be slow to get up to speed. And just here, it's just he's fighting a giant worm and he's fighting a lion, and like, that's cool enough, but he's done stuff like that, or even more impressive stuff. So the more interesting parts were like the dream in the desert or the reclaiming spear, but then that didn't follow through. So there's stuff that's engaging, and then there's stuff that's kind of like rote, but or like lesser versions of his former self in a less interesting way. But that's just kind of how I feel.
That's cool.
Not that you can't turn around, so, but I'm just how I'm feeling right now.
I'm thinking right now, I'm just sort of viewing this as like just a creative person doing something and not like thinking too much about where this is headed, because I just don't have a lot of faith that we're going to get a redemption for this character. I feel like it's just suffering. I mean, the show is called Primal. And also, here was my goofy theory. I'm just throwing this out here. I have really, like, I would say that like 4% belief that this had actually happened. But remember the episode in the first season where there was like the spear monster?
Yeah.
Spear monster?
Yeah, that was in like the Victorian times.
Oh, that was Darwin, and he was having a tea party or something, and then he did accosted by a murderer.
What if this is all lead up to that, you know?
I need to remind myself.
Oh, you're saying that Spear lived for like several thousands of years as a zombie.
Yeah.
No, but we saw the person. They were like killed at the end of the episode, weren't they?
I can't remember. Again, it's very low. And then the other thing was like, what if he turns into like Sasquatch or some other kind of mythical creature that just roams the land unseen? You know, that's his fate. I don't know.
That's so random, but
I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know. Like,
I'm still curious, like, where exactly in the timeline this fits. Because at the end of season two, we got a flash forward to his daughter, and so it's like Zombie Spear going to meet his daughter. Like, when is this exactly? I'm a little unclear about that, but maybe I'm missing something.
I don't know.
Yeah, Seda and I kind of speculated, and we weren't sure either. I think narrative wise, I don't really know where this show is going, but I think that the storytelling continues to be very well done. And it's a real looker of a show, and it's really, the pacing is great. It's just, what are we doing? It's kind of the big question. All right. Well, let's move on to the next show on the block, Bleach. Thousand Year Blood War, Core 3, Episode 8, Baby, Hold Your Hand. And I'll just start out by saying this was a weird episode.
It's Mayuri fight. Those are weird episodes by definition.
Yeah, I think this might have been the first time I've seen one. And yeah, it's freaking weird. So here's the quick rundown. Kenpachi and Mayuri run into this one of the Stern Ritters who we've not seen do anything before. It's the faceless one.
No, we have. Remember when he tore apart Yorichi's arm?
Yeah, he did. That was the one thing he did. That's true. He did do that. But we've never seen their face or anything. We don't know what they look like. They just kind of call it a thing.
Pernita, I think, something or another, right?
Yeah, it's Pernita something.
It speaks really weirdly, almost like kind of like a, I don't know, like a me do this kind of way it talks.
Even Mayuri, you mentioned somewhere in the episode, like, I'm not sure how you make those sounds.
Yeah.
You don't seem to have like a voice box.
It doesn't have like its eyes kind of has like just two glowing dots and they move around in ways that eyes can't move and stuff.
Yeah. He's not even sure if he has one eye or two. Mayuri's like, what's going on there over there?
Kenpachi is like, screw it. I'm going to fight him. You know, Mayuri's like, hey, we should learn things. And
Leroy Kenpachi, Jenkins.
Yeah. Leroy Jenkins, it runs in, starts fighting. But this thing takes off Kenpachi's arm.
Well, technically Kenpachi cuts off his own arm, because if he did not, the rest of his body would follow the fate of said arm.
Yeah, everything would have gotten twisted to death. Kenpachi's still like, oh, I'm gonna keep going. And then that's when Mayuri like pulls out this really freaking weird sword that he has, and he stabs Kenpachi in the back, and then like the sword has like a little baby face on it or something, and he sticks his fingers into the baby face's mouth and it does this weird scream, and basically ultimately it paralyzes Kenpachi.
We've seen the sword before. Like, if you're familiar with Bleach, you're familiar with the sword.
Mayuri had a big fight with Ichigo forever ago.
Did he fight Ichigo? He fought Ishida during Soul Society.
Oh, it was Ishida, that's right. Yeah,
and then he fought the eighth Espada in Waco Mundo. Obviously, he fought Giselle earlier this
year. I was thinking the Uryu one, the first one. Okay. That's when we first kind of saw him, his weird set of abilities.
Yeah, that's when we learned where he basically slaughtered Uryu's father, not father, grandfather for his experiments. So just in case, you know, Mario has done multiple genocides, but I guess he's still one of the good guys. So because Soul Society's whatever.
Well, it turns out he's kind of deduced that this Quincy is the Soul King's left arm. So it kind of comes to realize that this is what's going on. He's not sure why a Quincy is the form of the Soul King's left arm, but that's what he deduces. And nonetheless, it does, of course, turn into the form of that. It looks like kind of similar to that cloud we saw go above that last guy who was the right arm.
Ukitake?
You're going to tell me what the name of the character is who's I can't remember, because I can't remember. There's too many characters in this show. But yes, that character, the guy who sacrificed himself, basically.
White haired guide or the 13th captain, whatever works for you. But
yeah.
I will say, if you remember, we saw this exact shape and form when Ichiban spoke to Yubaba in that flashback. Do you remember that when Ichiban closed Yubaba's eyes, he made a form, and you saw this flash up on the screen, this exact form?
Yes, we saw that, yep.
I don't remember that. Okay.
I remember that.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm cool to call back that. So yeah, we've seen this form before, basically.
Well, this thing, the Soul King's left arm in the form of this Quincy, is attacking, and it kind of uses nerve endings to fight, and the nerve endings kind of go out like tendrils that crawl along the ground and is chasing after Mayuri. When we come back from the commercial break, I wrote down, Mayuri shoots a man dagger and cuts off its pinky.
Yeah, he shoots a little like a screaming like blob thing with a face on it, and it's like explosive that I think blows off one of the fingers of Pernita, I think.
It was a very WTF moment. A lot of people in the thread are like, what the hell? Because this like thing is screaming in agony. This little faced blob of human.
Yeah, he like cuts off a and he cuts off a finger, and he says something like he wants to like store it for later. He even throws like a preservative on it.
Yeah, because he wants to do some research on it.
Yeah, but then the finger like grows into another hand. And he's actually pretty like nonplussed about this. He's just kind of like, well, I guess I can't take this thing back. You know, I have to take this back to my lab whole. Like, you can't take back a part because it's just going to grow into another hand or whatever.
Yeah.
And then Pernita starts ripping off his own fingers to like split, multiply himself as well.
Exactly. So we end up with like several of these. And that's when Mayuri summons his new altered Bankai, this giant fat kind of baby thing that like kind of births a golden baby.
Baby when a baby.
I'm going to post these in the chat what these are. So this is his normal Bankai, which he's done before.
Which is also a baby, but this is a new like baby.
Yeah, that's the other baby form. Konjigi Ashi Sogi Jizo. And then the modified form, he actually said this in Japanese, like the voice actor did.
Yeah, props to the voice actors, because they must have done multiple takes on this to get this right. Yeah.
So that's the modified form.
I'll take a stab. Konjigi Ashi Sogi Jizo Matai Fukuin Shotai. I wanted to, and I just now remembered, if I hadn't fallen asleep before we recorded, I would have done this. I wanted to include that clip into this, but the clip of him explaining this is like bonkers, because he talks for like 20 seconds about this, and it's just like all of this kind of gibberish, and it's kind of crazy.
It seems like also, if I understood it properly, it almost seems very conveniently set to like counter Pernita's abilities.
Well, he said the way it works is that it takes battle data and uses that to make a new version of his Bankai. So like, fighting Pernita, so he was getting the data. That. So that it wasn't just happened to randomly counter it, actually using the data from the battle he was just in. So
makes sense.
So in this specific case, it's like this baby's like has like 70 layers of nerves on the surface of his body. So if you try to like, you know, if Pernita tries to take it over with his nerve abilities, it just like peels off.
Yeah.
I think it was like 7,000 or 700,000. It was
70,000. Sorry.
70,000 layers. Yeah. And it's like, but also like this giant blobular golden baby, like he's like, everything it touches, even the wind, causes it excruciating pain because its nerve endings are on the outside. And it's like, God dang. But yeah, the baby, the attacks can't hurt this baby Bankai thingy. And then it just grabs and starts eating the hand and ultimately devours it. So I guess he won.
Yeah. Yes, definitely Bleach fight ends in one episode. That's definitely a thing that happens.
I forget who said it, where it feels like Kubo Mayuri must be one of his like favorite characters.
Oh yeah, for everyone said that the dude gets too many fights.
Yeah,
where he gets to just glaze himself and jerk off in front of the camera. Like, it's clear he loves Mayuri. No, he does, and I'm being sincere. That's what
I'm with you. I'm with you, I mean, I enjoy watching this character, but like, this is the first time I've seen him do something outside of exposition, and it is just like bizarre. Like, everything he does is like, he's like, body horror is his like thing.
Yeah, he's like Mengele basically.
Yeah, it's weird.
Oh, shout outs to Kenpachi, who had to kill one of the main or most prominent female characters in the cast to get a power up, and then ever since he's beaten that Quincy, he's been just getting jobbered left and right. So kudos, that was wonderful, well played, Kubo and Kenpachi and everyone involved. Hooray, that was definitely worth it.
There was also a bit in this episode about Kenpachi's underlings and Mayuri's assistant, and how Mayuri's assistant is kind of like very soft-spoken and sits back and waits for her opportunity to do whatever's requested of her master and stuff. There's like kind of like a weird mystery about her that they're not going too much into here. But
well, there's some like her name is Nemu, and unsurprisingly, there's going to be an upcoming flashback that explains a little bit more about the relationship. We did learn stuff about them in previous arcs, but I know you haven't watched them, we are familiar with her to some degree, but there's upcoming flashback that'll give some key details.
I do recognize that she's in the opening, like the opening shows, or no, sorry, the ending. She might be in the opening too. The ending shows like
she's in the opening,
like in the opening too.
I know what he's talking about.
I'm thinking of the ending, I think, where it shows quick clips or like just like still images of many of the characters. And there's so many, there's a lot of characters in there, but she's one of them. So it's like, she's going to do something.
Yeah.
I was editing the compilation of the openings for our upcoming award show. And I noticed that too. I was like, oh yeah. During the fight that we see here in this episode, there's also a shot of her doing something. And it's like, okay, she's obviously going to be playing some kind of important role soon. So
the only thing I remember about her is she's like a homunculus of some sort. Like she's not a real person. She was made.
Yeah, she's an artificial soul, basically.
Yeah, I don't know all the details and specifics, Bleach lore of that, but like she's not a normal person.
Gotcha. So. All right. Anything other about this episode we want to mention? It was just crazy weird.
One thing I do want to actually shout out Mayuri's voice actor. Like he's got a very unique voice, and to like pull that off, and it doesn't, it's not like, how do I put that? He kind of has a grating voice, but it sort of works. And I actually use his voice. His name is Terrence Stone, and he actually doesn't have a ton of roles. So they just kind of like, he has like a lot of like cartoon roles, like from years and years ago, but like they found a kind of a voice that I think is suitable. That's pretty unique for this very unique character. So I think that was actually a pretty decent job from this guy.
Yeah, I like listening to him talk, and especially it's a combination of the way he talks and his like cadence and voice, but also it's the things he says. I kind of like the bit that happened a couple of times in this episode where Kenpachi kept asking questions, and then Mayuri was like, are you really asking me this question, or are you just talking out loud? Because if you're asking me a question, I'm going to tell you again, I don't know the answer to that question. It's like that kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
it's kind of fun. And then I did like too that other moment when there was a callback to that again. And he's like, I don't know if you're asking me this question or not, or if you're just thinking aloud. And that's the one Kenpachi says, actually, this time I'm just thinking aloud. And that's when he goes and rushes to attack the second time.
And gets owned again.
Gets owned. But still, it was very badass of him in that moment. All right. Well, that'll do it for this week's body horror edition of Bleach. So let's move on to Blue Exorcist. Blue Exorcist, Beyond the Snow Saga, Episode 11, Beyond the Snow. We are there. We're beyond the snow now, guys. At least according to this episode title. We learn that a Dullahan, a bunch of gremlins, and some Yeti are attacking somewhere. And so all of the True Cross people are kind of, well, not True Cross, but the Exorcist people are all busy right now working on that.
There's a scene with like the Exorcist, like higher, you know, leadership talking with, I guess, like the, you know, Japanese parliament and prime minister. They're kind of debating what to do. And
yes,
they're like, are they going to reveal? Cause I guess like demons in this world, I have to remind myself, like comparing it to, you know, other shows and whatnot, like what do normal people know about demons? And they're kind of like vaguely understood to be like maybe around, but not like a concrete thing. But I guess they're wondering if they need to like reveal these demons. It's like, yep, demons exist and they are among us.
Right. So. Cause most people can't see them. And also demons have a tendency to keep away from highly populated areas. So that combined
I get it a little bit mixed up with Demon Slayer, which I think was similar, where it's like, some people believe in demons, but not everyone believes in demons. They're like, you know, it's not a concrete, everyone understands that these things are real.
Yeah. Demon Slayer was more like people weren't running into a lot of them. And so there was like, it was more like a myth where you're like you said here in Blue Exorcist, up until this episode, as we'll learn, nobody other than special people can see demons even at all.
Right. In Demon Slayer, anyone can see a demon if you run into one, which is, so you're fucked, but. And here, you can have a demon right next to you and not know it for most of the population.
Yeah, I actually remember an episode a season ago where just a random classmate of Rin starts seeing demons or like a ghost in the class, and he starts freaking out because he's just like, what is this thing? So,
yeah, that was like the first time that people who shouldn't be able to see start to be able to see them. Mm-hmm. the meeting you were talking about earlier was between Mephisto and the Prime Minister. And in that moment, the Prime Minister was being really stupid. Like, I won't go too much into it, but he was just being really like, we can't do that, blah, 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 blah. You know, that kind of generic, like, we can't tell them. But it gets so bad that he ultimately does. They hold a press conference. The Prime Minister comes up on and he's like, I'm going to tell you something very crazy. You're going to have to bear with me and, you know, buckle down. But there is, and he doesn't say demons. He says there are antisocial organisms attacking the world and we need to fight them.
So when he first said that, I was like, am I supposed to think that's a really silly phrase? But then Mephisto immediately is just like, antisocial organism. Why did he call it that? Like, oh, okay, yeah. I'm supposed to understand that this is a really silly label that the Prime Minister just gave demons.
Yeah, I think they're like trying, this is political, right? Like, he can't say the word demon, so he's saying this, I guess.
Also, it makes it sound like some, like, radical political organization or something. Like, I don't know, it was Antifa or some bullshit, like, I don't know, some nonsense.
It's just, it's dumb politics where the politician can't really say the thing that he should say, so... While waiting backstage for his opportunity to step up as representatives of True Cross Academy to explain these antisocial organisms, Mephisto sees Yukio come walking up to him, and Yukio confronts Mephisto about what's going on. He shows Mephisto his glowing eye. He's like, tell me what is happening with my eye.
This part actually kind of amused me, and I actually kind of like how it turned out, because Mephisto literally, or not, Yukio literally asks, or really kind of demands, answer me. And Mephisto goes, no, I won't.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not going to. That was the most epic. Like, fuck you, bitch.
Yeah, it was great. And he's like, you're just going to have to wait and see. And then he goes to walk out. He stands up at the podium and he's getting ready to start speaking. We see Yukio draw his gun on Mephisto. And then, bang, Mephisto is shot dead in the temple and flies back to everyone's shock.
Actually, not quite the temple. Because it's like in the middle of his forehead.
No, yeah, it was right in the forehead. Yeah, it wasn't the temples.
I meant to say forehead and I said temple, my mistake. Yes.
See, the thing is, I noticed it immediately that Yukio shot from his side, but a bullet entered his forehead. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense.
I think I'm on the same wavelength.
Yeah, you know, my detective skills were on alert there. And I was just like, that doesn't make sense.
I was wondering, like, is that just like a weird animation error? But then a scene later when Shura is trying to make Yukio's case, because she's trying to, like, protect him or whatever. It's like, how could Yukio have shot Mephisto when the bullet wound is at the front of his head when Yukio was on his side? So, like, they brought that up.
Well, right before the commercial break, we see the aftermath of this shot. Mephisto's on the ground. He's kind of like, at first, he's kind of like, oh, it's all right. You know, it's just a bullet. I'll be fine. I'll reheal myself or whatever. But then he starts to kind of fall back again. And he's like, well, this is actually worse than I thought. I may have to, like, you know, quote unquote, die. For him, dying just means he'll take on a new form or whatever, but he will die. And he's like, but the big issue is that if this happens, the barrier, I'm going to, in order to keep my body alive, because I need to stay here on Earth to continue what I'm doing. But in order to do that, I have to take down the barrier that's keeping the demon world from coming into the real world. So I'm going to have to drop that. And that's what he does. And he's like telling, I think Shura this at the time, because he's like joking to her. It's like, you didn't do a very good job of protecting me. You're supposed to protect me. That's when we get the commercial break and we come back, and that's when I wrote down, wait, Yukio didn't shoot. And this is the scene you were talking about. Shura is kind of like explaining, no, it wouldn't have been his gun. It was impossible because of the angle and everything. And then Shura kind of, I mean, this whole time Yukio is just kind of staring at the ground, and but then he looks up and then very menacingly, and Shura sees that Yukio's eye is glowing, and she kind of like, whoa, what is this?
Yeah.
We then kind of see like a kind of a montage that the gate is opening and it kind of releases this wave that just goes all over the entire world. We see everywhere. We see the United States. Yeah. We see everywhere.
Yeah, we see they show the United States. They show England. They show France. Like,
yeah.
Yukio just caused a worldwide catastrophe, basically.
Well, he didn't technically, but we thought he did for a second till.
True.
Somebody did. And I kind of liked how they did it, too. We, as the audience, see this wave going over. This is, of course, the breaking of the barrier and that the world it can now see demons. But we see the wave, but we see also the normal people just walking around. They don't see that happening. They don't see this wave coming over. The X-Wires and other people see it. We see shots to like other members of the class kind of looking up and be like, what is that? Even like Rin is like, what is that? But nobody else sees it.
Giant fart cloud covering the entire planet.
Yeah.
I will say, it doesn't look like everyone was able to see demons immediately. I think it's going to be a gradual thing. You saw it pass over and you start to see some people being able to see demons, but not everyone. But I assume it's going to gradually be that everyone will see them over time.
I kind of took it more like it just happened so fast that like it's just like a couple of people. It's like it's like that scene at the end of Infinity War or whatever, where like everyone starts being ghosted or whatever. Everybody starts turning to dust. And it's like, at first people are just driving down the street. And then you see like one weird thing. And then you see another weird thing. And you see like a car crash. And it's like, I feel like it's kind of like that, where it's just like, it's going to ramp up.
Fall like dominoes.
We'll see next episode, I figure, in the season finale.
Yeah. Shura's got Yukio in the back of a truck. And she pulls up next to Rin, who's been searching everywhere for him. And she's like, we got to take Rin in, or we got to take Yukio in. He's going to have to come with us. And, you know, she can basically voicelessly, we kind of, as an audience, pulls back and we kind of hear her explaining everything basically to Rin about the fact that Yukio has the same power or some kind of power. Rin goes back to the dorm. He's freaking out and he's real mad. And he's like, I got to go rescue Yukio. And everybody's like, well, you know, we don't even know if they're going to do anything to him. And he's like, it doesn't matter. He's my brother. I got to rescue him. I got to go. At first, everybody doesn't really want to help, but then they kind of like decide, okay, well, we will help you. We'll help you try to break Yukio out of the Vatican.
I'm not sure if it's so much they didn't want to help at all as so much they didn't want to do their own Leroy Jenkins. So they kind of talked Rin down, but they're still supportive of him. So they're like, okay, we'll help you. We'll do something. We'll just not do something fucking stupid. And then of course, yes. And then I think Maimon and someone else comes in, be like, hey, so you guys want to do some raiding and breaking and entering, and I'm here to help.
And we get the credits, a kind of an early credits. And then we come back for a longer post credit scene. And this is, we see the actual, like, I thought they were going to save this for the next episode, but we're there. They are breaking in. Rin busts into Yukio's cell, basically, I'm here to rescue you.
Amaimon comes in through the smoke, okay. And he's got like a script, and he's like,
he's reading
I forget like exactly what his power is. Does he have the same power as Mephisto? He calls himself like Samael or whatever, and he's just like,
I don't know what his deal
something.
Is.
He kind of says something like, I am the Lord Samael, and I am here, blah, 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 fear me. I don't know exactly what he said, but he's reading off a script is the important part.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And then, like, I think Izumo and Shami are kind of like, oh, there's something going on. They're kind of faking, like, oh, we need your help. You need to go over here because something's going on, you know, trying to distract them and stuff. Like I said, Rin is in Yukio's cell, and he's like, we got to go. And then Yukio, again, who's just been staring at the floor this whole time, just kind of looks up again very slowly. He's like, why should I go with you? And he's just like, I dubbed him Dark Yukio here because that's what he is to me now. He's like the evil Yukio, not evil maybe, but just like, I don't know.
And depressive. Then I think the last scene of the episode when Yukio is starting to like leave the cell and whatnot, he sees like just a gun on the floor and he kind of like stares at the gun menacingly. Yeah. So what's he going to do with that gun?
I got to tell you, man, like we've been saying this over and over, but like, I really like that this series is finally gotten full fifth gear when it comes to its overall arching, like main plot. It felt like for like a season and a half, we were dealing with just sort of like not dealing with that stuff. And that's like all we're dealing with anymore now.
Yeah. Remember at the end of the second season where it's just kind of like, woo, we got a big smoky blob monster that we have to take out. And it wasn't really that engaging.
No. So it felt like a side quest.
Yeah.
So what are your guys' thoughts on the direction that we're going here? I mean, I think it's exciting that the whole world is now like, oh no, the demons, but also like this Dark Yukio stuff is just like, I don't know. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. Like it's our, the stakes have of course ratcheted up. I don't mind Yukio acting a little bit illogical here. I mean, more than a little bit. Like, he's obviously, like, struggling as a person right now, and he's got, like, his own inner demons, literally and figuratively, to deal with at the moment. And he's causing, well, we don't know exactly who shot Mephisto, but a lot of the stress of this whole R season has been, like, his personal, like, he's a source of a lot of the drama here, and now we have this huge world-altering event taking place with, you know, we've had Bon and Lightning kind of discovering more and more hidden secrets of the plot that have been kind of lingering in the background this whole time that are starting to come to light, and there's still a lot of questions. We still don't know what Shiemi's deal is.
Well, yeah, that we did just kind of forget about that because of all the other nonsense going on.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking an Illuminati member probably was in the crowd that shot Mephisto. That's my thinking here.
It was Toto.
Oh, that seems really likely. Yeah, I could see that.
Oh, that, yeah, it could be.
Yeah, that's a good guess, I think. All right, yeah, exciting stuff on Blue Exorcist, man. The show continues to be very engaging with its crazy plot, and you know, this Yukio stuff
is just like, and
it's fun to watch him.
I'm almost disappointed that we're gonna see something crazy happen in the next episode, and then we're gonna have to wait for an indefinite amount of time to see if we'll get to continue it.
So. I agree. All right, well, we got two more shows to go, so let's begin with Mashal. Mashal, Season 2, Episode 11, Mash Burn Dead, and the Origin of the Greatest Magic User. Crocodile's got to head out. Thank you for being here, Crocodile. All right, again, quick rundown here. Mash runs in the air, just like I predicted.
Yeah. Well, he's kind of done this before, but I was wondering if it'd be anything more to it, but nope, he just kicks his legs really fast all the time. Doesn't get tired.
Yeah, it's very Looney Tunes. We learn here that Innocent Zero can actually steal magic, and he starts to steal Dumbledore's magic here.
Wahlberg.
He does, actually. And I wrote down lots of Mash gasps. There's a lot of like Innocent Zero giving exposition here, and then we would cut to like a shot of Mash going, oh, no,
yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, kind of an exaggerated, like gasp. Where
it's just goofy.
The thing is that he almost sounds sarcastic, but I don't think he is.
I agree. I think he's just like kind of goofy.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say stupid, but just kind of like blasé to the point that his surprise is genuine.
Even though it sounds like a sarcastic gasp.
So Innocent Zero starts to use some of Wahlberg's magic, his spatial magic, and just kind of showing it off. He like this removes the top of a mountain, you know, that kind of stuff. And Wahlberg's even like, I couldn't even use my magic to this degree. He's super powerful.
Yeah, they're remarking how like he has my magic, but it's even stronger than my own ability.
Yeah, yeah. It's like he's just got more well of magic in him. But it turns out that's actually not a good thing, because we start to then see Innocent Zero's body start to like convulse. And he's like, there's so much magic in him right now. His body is not powerful enough to actually hold it. It's hurting him. And so he's like, and we kind of see like, he does this thing where like his face keeps like, he has to keep reconstructing his face, and it does it in like cubes. It's very weird.
Yeah. Looking. This is sort of when we first saw him, he had like, his head looked like a mannequin head. Like it had no features at all. And then it did like that sort of like cube reconstruction to make his like, I'm going to assume a false face, because he's about the same age as Wahlberg, right? We would assume. And he's clearly looks younger. And so it seems he's artificially, you know, I don't know if he's actually like made himself younger or appears younger, or he's maybe not fully human anymore. Obviously, we know that he's he's created like six or eight or however many, you know, children that he wants to somehow absorb to like become the perfect being. They've said this explicitly in this episode. He even calls MASH an ingredient. Like, you are an ingredient to me.
So. Yes. He calls him my son, but I don't think he means it affectionately. He's like, you're my son. You're an ingredient.
Yeah, I wrote my own notes and he called him his son, but then he later calls him an ingredient. So
yeah,
that's what he is to him. That's what MASH is to Innocent Zero.
Right. But, you know, MASH is determined to want to defeat Innocent Zero, but Innocent Zero is not going to give him the opportunities. He kind of realizes that he needs to kind of, I guess, recharge or something or protect himself. So Innocent Zero sort of creates a portal and he's like going to leave. And he's like, all right, I'm going to leave now. Oh, I'll run into you again, MASH Burn Dead. And but he says, I'll leave you with something. And so he takes all the little gremlin demon monsters that he'd created before. And then he like sucks them up into the air outside the Colosseum and then forms them into one giant monster. And he's like, yep. Here, deal with this. And then he leaves. We get the commercial break. And when we come back, because Innocent Zero's left, time begins moving again for everybody else. So all of the people in the stadium are now unfrozen. I wrote down some of them look for a hidden caster of the barrier. So there's some kind of barrier that's blocking the giant monster.
Yeah. So I wrote down some notes. So yeah, I forget who it is. Maybe Dot shoots some like fire magic at the big Titan guy, but it just like bounces off of him. And I think Caldo or maybe Rio explain like there's some caster protecting the Titan monster thing. But so you can't hurt it with magic right now. And I actually wrote down, and I found this mildly interesting. So Dot teams up with Caldo to try to find the caster. So they're starting to run around finding the caster. I don't think they ever do in this episode. And Order's looking also. And then Lance teams up with Marion, I think to try to help or to protect the, they're like Lance is doing his gravity magic and Marion doing his or her music magic too. That's their name, right? Marion? Am I remembering that right?
Not, I don't think Margaret? It's Marion. It's something, it? Margaret.
Margaret. I had the wrong M.
Yeah.
They use their music magic to protect the students. I found that kind of interesting that we're getting like one of our kind of main core cast teaming up with different characters, one of them being a divine visionary, one of them being just another powerful student. I have to remind myself, I don't think they actually found the caster.
No.
But the key thing to know is that we cannot beat this Titan thing with magic. So here comes MASH.
Exactly. It's like nothing can get through this magical barrier. No magic can get past it. What we need is something that doesn't use magic, and that's MASH. So yeah, MASH, suddenly the monster, which was lunging towards the Colosseum, suddenly is stopped and can't move forward. And we see, of course, MASH has grabbed a hold of its giant chains and is tugging it back. And in the final moments of the episode, we get a lot of shots of the various people, the other students at the academy. They're kind of like, oh, it's MASH Burn Dead. I can't believe he's doing that. And then like, and then they start to have the most obvious epiphany that we as viewers have known all along, where it's like, huh, he doesn't have any magic, but look what he's doing. I guess that's kind of cool. And maybe he's awesome because even though he doesn't have magic. And they start cheering for him. Everyone's like, MASH, MASH, go, MASH, go. You know, that kind of thing. All the students have like finally agreed that MASH is cool, even though he's, what are they, lack magic? He's a lack magic.
It's not quite the same, and I'm sure there's a TV tropes page for this, but it kind of reminds me of like Spider-Man 2 or, you know, similar scenes where the general populace kind of in a moment of need accept this person and, you know, all they can do is vocally support him in this moment, but they do. So,
And we even see like a little brief moment of Finn, where he's just sort of like almost in tears. He's like, I always knew you, MASH, you were great. And now everyone else does too. The MASH, of course, hears this and gives him the inspiration and strength he needs to like literally fling this giant monster away, spins it with its chain and flings it.
Also, Lemon is there.
Yeah. And also Lemon is like, oh yeah, well, we've been, so they come running up at the end and, our main cast comes running up at the end, and Lemon is there, and she's like, I knew you
she
could
does
do
her
it, my
usual thing.
My husband, you, I knew you could pull it off. And she like waits for a kiss, and then she doesn't get one because Mash is eating
a cream puff.
Cream puff.
That's that cream gag puff. Again. Same old gag.
Yeah, that's her like one contribution to this show, unfortunately. And that is it. We've got one more episode to go of Mashal.
And we know there's a season 3 coming. I forget if it was this year or next year. So I'm assuming, I don't know how long the manga is. So I don't know if like the next season is like Endgame. It's not a very long show if that's the case compared to some others. But I'm assuming the next episode is going to be more of a, the last episode is going to be more of like a cool down based on everything that happens, but then probably tease what Innocent Zero's plans are now or whatever. So
I think so too. And if we stick with the normal formula that we've been having with Mashal, some of the people who were previously antagonists towards him will probably be on his side fully now and that kind of thing. Although that's kind of already happened a little bit here. So.
Yeah. I mean, of the Divine Visionaries, the only one that was like antagonistic to Mashal was Orcher, the sand guy. Now, yeah. He hasn't really interacted with Mash since like he was introduced.
That's true.
But maybe he'll be like, I accept you, even though I don't trust you.
I kind of doubt it. But like he'd be the one holdout probably. But I think everybody else is going to be Team Mashal like openly now.
Yeah. Like we know Reigns. We know Reigns trust Mash. We know Caldo is more of just kind of a neutral towards everyone type of character. And then Rio was also supportive of Mash earlier. So
yeah. All right. We'll tune in this weekend to find out what happens. Will Mash eat another cream puff? I would say yes. So let's move on to the final show of the block, One Piece. One Piece episode 761. The time limit closes in. The bond between the Mink tribe and the crew.
Kind of a weird way to phrase it. The time limit closes in. I'm assuming that's referring to the like the poison gas. Like they talk about in this episode how I guess I'll start summarizing the episode. They realize that a lot of the Minks are getting poisoned, and Caesar reveals that we already knew that yes, this was a gas he made, and he reveals that, you know, the poison takes kind of 2 days to take effect, or two days after being exposed to it, that's when you start to like succumb to it, start to die. And they estimate that they've been poisoned for about 1 day. So they're like, we have 1 day to heal everyone to make sure they are safe and don't pass away. Like that's the time limit closing in. It's kind of a weird way to phrase it for the title, but I'm assuming that's what they're referring to. So
I agree. I think that is what it is. Yeah. By the way, what we're seeing here in this portion of the flashback took place 10 days ago, apparently. I remember last time asking, why are they just letting Caesar walk around? Like, why isn't he in chains or something?
Oh, because they have his heart.
I was reminded of that in this episode. Sanji is carrying his disembodied heart in one of those Trafalgar Law cubes. And so, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, do what we tell you to, or else you're going to feel tremendous pain. Because I assume getting your heart squeezed does not.
Right. He tends to writhe in pain when they do that. So Sanji and Chopper are like, you shouldn't be happy about this. You created this gas. Now I want you to clean it up. So he does. He has to. He has no choice. He's really disgruntled about it, but he does. So once the gas is removed, some of the Minks start to slowly kind of come back to consciousness. And then suddenly we see that Wanda is there, and she comes flying in and attacks Nami. Nami kind of defends herself and then ends up kind of on top of Wanda. And then Wanda has like stick a burning dynamite in her hand. And she's like, Wanda thinks that the Straw Hat crew were with Jack. and she's trying to get revenge here. She's like, oh,
yeah, they probably don't meet humans all too often. So to her in this moment, she just assumes all humans are against us. So
that's a good point. It's a reasonable assumption for her to make, for sure. No one really goes to Zoe. So she's thinking everyone's bad. And that's kind of when we leave off the commercial break airs with this dynamite's about to explode. When we come back, the kind of like reindeer, not reindeer, but kind of doe. Maybe she might be a reindeer. I don't know. This one mink named Tristan. And then the one I mentioned last week, Pedro, come running up and they're like, stop, Wanda, stop. These ones are good because Tristan in particular was kind of, we saw her briefly in the forest when
Sanji beat up the other two.
Yeah, when Sanji beat up Sheep's Head and whatnot. So she kind of knows that the Straw Hats are good. They plead with Wanda to stop, and she does. And then basically Chopper rallies everyone to save the mink. So everyone is put to work. Chopper's doctoring. Yeah, did you get that?
Yes.
Okay.
Insert 5-second clip of the sound.
I will.
From the theme. Usopp's doing that marksman thing. Sanji's cooking. Chopper's
doctoring. Dio. I was thinking that the whole time. Chopper's doctoring. But we see like the other doctor minks come running in because they were spared because they were held back. They weren't the fighters. So they came running to help. I think the Beppo and the rest of the
Caesar is
pirates.
Forced to help.
Yeah, Caesar's forced to help. Everyone's forced to help.
Sanji makes food.
Yeah. Then we get a montage of healing. Yeah, and
Brooke starts playing his one song that he knows.
Yeah, somebody in the thread was like, Brooke needs to get a new set list. Like,
yeah.
And I was like, this show needs to get a new set list.
That's true.
By the way, I was going to save this for when we record the award show. I'll tell you now since you're here. I'm making a compilation of all the music from the soundtracks of the shows this year to kind of help us better like make a judgment call on best soundtrack. I am not including One Piece.
It's just the same music it always is.
It's the same freaking music.
If you were to ask me, when did One Piece last add like a new track? Like when did I last realize there was something new playing? Like, I have no idea.
They did add a track or two for Dressrosa because they had like the music of their culture.
Yeah.
But that was it. Everything else is just the same music they've had for 20 years. But yes, Brooke is playing Yo-Ho-Ho, Yo-Ho-Ho, that song, whatever. Being Sake or whatever. And and everybody's healing, and we see Sanji's making a big feast for everyone. He feeds Dogstorm, as Dogstorm's like, he has like one cup, and he's like, I don't want any more.
I think, wasn't that Pedro?
Or maybe it was Pedro. Yeah, I think
I think he was feeding Pedro, and Pedro was like, make sure everyone else gets their share.
Okay. And he's like, no, I can make more. Just eat as much as you need to. And then we cut back into the present day, because remember, we've all just been sort of sitting in Duke Dogstorm's bedroom this whole time. And Wanda's there and she's like, well, it's about time for us to go see Cat Viper. Well, it is time, I guess, because everyone's already asleep. And somebody asks the question we were asking. It's like, well, wait, Wanda, why aren't you going to sleep? And she says, oh, you see, I'm a king's bird, which means I'm somebody who goes both the day and night. I don't do the whole like go to sleep at six thing.
Now, how is that bestowed upon someone so that they don't get tired? Because it seems like if you're not a king's bird, you don't have a choice. Once 6 p.m. rolls around, you are sleeping.
I kind of wonder that, too. I was thinking, like, when does she sleep? She has to sleep at some point. Maybe she just takes naps. I don't know.
And, like, what magic or whatever allows her to not get tired? Because everyone else, it seems like they don't have a choice. They have to get tired. Like,
yeah, I kind of feel
like it. Seems like it.
I kind of, like I said, I kind of feel like there's just like designated nap times for Wanda that we don't see. That's my theory.
Well, even that other musketeer guy that's with Dogstorm, I forget his name. Sorry. It almost was like he tried to stay awake, but he could not.
I don't think that's magic. I think that's just literally their sleep schedule.
Like he okay.
He just can't stay awake because it's time to sleep. And if you
they're
have
they're as so, rigid... They're so rigidly adhered to the sleep schedule. Okay.
I think that's literally it. I think it's just because remember a couple episodes ago, they did say, well, why don't we stay and fight? It's like as a, that was an option that Dogstorm could have stayed awake.
Oh, and then and then Dogstorm argues like actually switching out is better.
Yeah, so. I think it's just that they choose to sleep at six, but they've probably been doing it their whole lives, and thus like they can't help it. Yeah. They just fall asleep. So yeah, that's it. Everybody's off to go meet Cat Viper now. So we've kind of been brought up to story and met Dogstorm, and now we got to go meet Cat Viper.
I'm kind of surprised. I guess Luffy asked. Feels like 10 episodes ago now, but it's like, where's Sanji? Where is he?
Yeah, like, he's kind of forgotten it, hasn't he? It's a big deal.
Like, so what happened to him? And what happened to Caesar? I'm assuming, like, I know it's going to come up, but just like...
Oh, yeah. But like, half of me is probably, like, if I wanted to rationalize it, half of me is saying this is, like, bad pacing. And the other half of me is saying, like, this is Luffy being like, Sanji can take care of himself, you know, that kind of thing. But... yeah, it's important, and you're right.
It's kind of the obvious question. It's like, okay, you're talking about what Sanji was doing, what Caesar did, and what, you know, what happened. Where are they now? So,
again, I don't remember the details of this part of the story. So this guess I'm giving you, I honest to truth, is 100% a guess. I don't know. But my guess is that they're going to go talk to Cat Viper, and Cat Viper is going to fill them in on some of that, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there's more exposition to come.
And that is it for One Piece. Again, like I've been saying, Zoe, the arc that takes place entirely in a flashback, practically.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Well, let's talk briefly about flavor alerts for 2026.
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Did you want to nominate Terrence Stone?
I do think it's a good... Sure, why not? Like... it's really only relegated to a couple of episodes that Mayuri is in, but I think I do want to just give him props for a unique voice for a unique character. Obviously don't know how he sounds in Japanese and if it's like feels faithful to that, but just in a vacuum as it is, like it's hard for me now to imagine that voice on anyone else.
Yeah.
Compared to, you know, some of the voice actors we hear, you know, like, I don't know, Bryce Papenbrook kind of sounds just like Bryce Papenbrook no matter where he is. So where this character is like, that's Mayuri's voice, and it's hard for me to imagine that on anyone else. So sure, let's give him props.
Okay, yeah, I've gone ahead and added that. He's one of my favorite characters on the show as I'm watching it. He's just such a weirdo, and I do enjoy the way he talks. It's very funny. I've said it many times, he's very condescending and so full of himself, but he's also very logical, and like, you know what he's saying is true because he doesn't bullshit around. So I don't know. I like it.
Did we nominate worst character Lemon for last year?
Great question.
Is Lemon more of just a nothing character?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty bad character when you have no character.
Especially when it's like the one we did not. I almost feel like we should retroactively add her.
Let's do it.
Because especially it's especially disappointing when she's like the one female character in the show and she just kind of sucks.
Yep. So, she's added. That's for 2025 because she's been doing this since the beginning.
Yeah. All right. What else? I think even though it was in a 2026 episode, the fact that she came back to her one gimmick in this episode just made me think of that. Like, this is all she does ever.
It's the only thing she's ever contributed to the show. She's never done anything of note.
Nope.
At all. We've talked about how we feel like she was just forcibly added to the manga by the editor. Anything in Blue Exorcist that was really standout or interesting? I think we kind of knew most everything. With the exception of the shooting.
I almost feel like we should wait until to see how this season kind of like concludes. And then from there, we can decide, like, we already have best moment, Yukio pulls a gun, which I think is still a valid moment. Like, that was kind of the, we knew he was kind of, that's when he like crossed a line.
Right.
And it was like, whoa, this is getting more and more serious. And that was kind of like the very first, like, obviously we knew he was kind of spiraling before then, but that was, you know, when things were like really ratcheted up in terms of what are you doing, Yukio?
Right.
But maybe we should wait and see what happens to determine like best character, worst character, performance, things like that. So
okay, yeah, I'm cool with that. Let's wait. I don't think the Mayuri fight I don't think that will count as a best fight to me. I was certainly a memorable one, but I don't know if it's best.
Yeah, I think the Ryu Renji one was a better like just fight in terms of like a more traditional shonen fight with the animation and choreography and whatnot. So
okay.
Do we have best power ability or weapon? Do we want to add Pernita being a weird freaky nerve arm thing?
I don't know.
I say nominate it.
Okay. All right.
What do you call that? Pernita. That Pernita, I think, is the name, but what is let me see what the Bleach Wiki calls their ability.
Yeah, what do they call its ability?
I'm assuming it's gonna be some.
Oh, I did it. Well, I got it. It's called the Compulsory.
Okay.
Extends its nerves to invade bodies, controlling movements and causing instant destruction, and manipulate inorganic matter like the ground.
Cool. I don't know.
All right. That's pretty weird.
Sure.
I will write that down. I'm going to have to describe this one, though. Where is it at? Best power ability. We call it the Compulsory. And this is... Pernita? In Bleach.
Pernita. The last name, I guess, is Parnk, Jess. I don't know how you pronounce that. P-A-R-N-K-G-J-A-S.
Oh, I see it. Yeah.
Jeez, you got these five consonants in a row. R-N-K-G-J.
I'm not even sure. I'm not even sure if that's like a literal way you can say that, or if that's just like the mangaka thinking that looks cool to spell it that way. I don't know. But okay, it's added.
What else? Anything else? Nothing in One Piece.
No.
Nothing in Primal yet. Like Primal, I think, is a strong showing for like best looking show so far. But that you don't need to nominate that.
Exactly. So. I did notice, I want to mention this too, that I did notice a little more of the music in this episode from Primal than I've noticed before. I'm not gonna say like amazing, but I was like, oh, that's pretty good. You know, kind of like the music stood out at once for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty good. But you're right. There's nothing like amazing. I mean, it's just like a really, it's hard to describe that show in any way, honestly. Other than to say that I think it's well done, I just don't really know how to put to words my thoughts on that. All right. I think that's good. We added a couple of things. All right. So let's wrap up the show. Before we leave, just as a reminder, even though you're the only one here, anyone who listens, because I think Crocodile listens, we are going to be recording our 2025 awards this coming weekend on Sunday. We're planning to record in the morning. So look forward to that. And yeah, I'm excited about it. You're still good to go, right?
Yep. Sundays are pretty free for me. So, you know, open schedule.
Sounds like we're going to have the whole crew.
The usual crew.
So it's going to be you, me, Crocodile, Grexino, and Chug are all going to be here to do those awards. Should be fun. Okay. Well, that'll do it for episode 459. Thanks for being here, Seda.
Yeah, no problem.
We will be back next week with a new episode and eventually our awards. So look forward to that. And until then, later. Later.